We should just delete this whole episode.
Yeah, we should. Again. Yeah. Just stop whining.
Right. Welcome to episode 30 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
So the topic today is going to be about when things go, I don't want to say the word wrong, awry, not quite as you expect, don't go according to plan. And this might kind of follow on a little bit from what we've been working on this week, but let's start with that and we'll see how we go. And we've also got a great question that came in about the merits or not, should I go on and take an MA in art? So I think that's going to be a good discussion. But first of all, how has your week been? And I should say at this point that we usually record this on a Thursday or a Friday, and then we have the weekend to edit and do all the bits and post it. And before it goes out on Tuesday, it is Monday morning. So we have to have it all done today. So the week has just begun. So we're talking about last week. How was last week for you?
Last week was a bit nuts. I have been saying for weeks about preparing to deliver a free course, and that was happening last week. And so it was a free online course. There ended up being about 3,000 people enrolled in it, which was a lot more than I expected.
It's amazing.
Now, of those, I would say there were probably 2,000 active people. There's always people who sign up and then for one reason or another they can't do it. But still, that is a lot of people. And it's been amazing fun and amazing learning, because you've been involved with CVP, which is an online course on a much bigger scale. And so you know what happens with these courses is that people have questions. I had 3,000 people enrolled. I had about 2,000 of those who were actively involved. And sometimes it felt like about 1,000 of those were sending me questions all at the same time.
Yeah.
And they were great questions, and I learned so much from doing it. And I must say I've got a year's worth of blog content and video content out of the questions. So absolutely no problem with it. But at times I was thinking, this cannot be any bigger and be one person.
Yeah,
it was full on 6 a.m. till midnight. And then there were the occasional, there was one lady who got really angry with me because I didn't write a long enough answer to her question. So when you're answering questions by email, you just have to be as quick as you can to answer each one. And I tried to mitigate my brusqueness by putting "love Louise, kiss, kiss" at the end. So it's like, you know, I'm not being rude. I'm just in a hurry. And so many people are lovely. 99.9% of people say, I know you must be really busy, but could you just let me know?
Yeah.
This one lady said, you know, I just think it's outrageous that you treated me so badly with this short answer. And, you know, you must think just because I'm a newbie, you don't care. And it was just really weird. And then she said, I'm going to give you some advice from somebody who knows about teaching. And she wrote a long quote about how to teach better.
Oh, that's useful.
Yeah. And instead of ignoring it, I wrote back very nicely and said, I'm really sorry. And I gave a longer answer. And she wrote back and said, I'm sorry, that's still not satisfactory. Okay. And I won't now be taking your course for 10 weeks. Oh, I'm so sorry about that. So apart from things like that, which was, and the thing is, the incidents like that, I tell you about that because it's funny, but they were so minimal that the people were amazing. The course was such good fun. And, you know, I got so many ideas from it to take forward in ways I can help people in posts and Facebook and, you know, on videos. Yeah. And so it was just, it's been really, really good fun. But I think if it was to be any larger, I would need some help with it.
I think so too. I think it's you know, when something kind of really blossoms like that, and I know you've been working so hard for so long to prepare for this, it feels like it's, you know, to people watching, it feels like, oh, here's this free course. there has been a huge amount going into this, getting ready for this, thinking about this, preparation, thinking about how you're going to let people know about it. It is a huge, huge, huge task. And it just, it looks like it's seamless. But what I was going to say was all those ideas that come to you, and it's kind of, they're fantastic. How do you keep track of those for future records? Do you just kind of write them down in a big sheet? Because I must have notebooks bulging about a million different documents on my computers, ideas for this, ideas for this, that never, sometimes some of them get to fruition, but some of them don't. So when you start to have, oh, I could do this, I could do this, I could do this blog post, I could do this other course about it, or people really want to know about X, does that start to feel overwhelming as a kind of second layer of overwhelm?
Yes. And I was thinking, how do you keep track of it? Oops, I don't. So I have post-it notes. I have some in my planner on a spare page. I have some in a document on a computer.
Yeah.
And I have this idea that I'm archiving the free course Facebook group next week.
So you can go back to that.
And I have this idea that I will go through and read it all and find them again. But of course, I won't be able to find everything and all the email questions. So a lot of it's in my head. And again, if you had someone to help you, that would be the kind of thing where they'd be dealing with some of the basic questions and you'd have time to compile your list, or they could compile a list of questions that come up. I did find an amazing software might be helpful for other people, for my blog, where you can take all your blog posts and pull them into a Word document so that you have them potentially for a book or whatever you want to use them for. And I started looking around if there was something like that for Facebook, because that would be ideal. You could take everything off Facebook and dump it into documents. But of course, it would make such a giant document that nobody's done.
Well, if you did all the comments. Yeah, I think the easiest way is to copy and paste into a Google document. But I think, as you say, everybody says that the Facebook search is no good and things do get lost. But you can go back and scroll through and search things. And sometimes it's a person that sticks in your mind or a phrase that they've used in the question. And you can go back and find. So it is there for you to go back to in that rare moment when you don't have an idea, which I don't think is likely to happen. But yeah. Anyway, congratulate it. You know, it has been, I was away, so I didn't actually partake any of the exercises, but watching people do it and the real mix of artists who were beginners, really kind of stepping outside of their comfort zone for the first time, and artists who were more experienced and wanted something to kind of freshen up their approach, and, you know, trying some of these exercises, maybe with a little bit of a, I'm sure I've done things like this before, and still learning and discovering new things and really finding something that they were going to take back to their practice. It was really nice to be watching that on the sidelines whenever I could. So that's great. So, this goes out on Tuesday and the full course goes for 10 weeks.
It does. It starts on the 19th of August, so not long. And the enrollment period is open now. So if anybody's thinking about doing it, you have until Friday, August 16th at midnight in New York, which I think is EDT at the moment, but I just say New York time. So that's when it closes for enrollment. I have to do that because I need a few days to make sure everything's okay and everything's ready for Monday.
Yep.
And then we just dive straight in on Monday. So if you're thinking about it, you can find out about it. Just go to my website, louisefletcherart.com, and right on the homepage, I have a link there for you to go and have a look. And feel free to send me a question. I can manage lots of questions.
One thing I have to say, when I saw that your close time was midnight New York time, that's 5 a.m. UK time.
Yeah.
So if you've got a question, please send it to Louise before then. Don't wait. Don't wait until then, because that wasn't great planning to have your close date at 5 a.m. in the morning.
It was actually going to be, my close date was going to be midnight UK time.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, that's not giving enough time for people in America. So I extended it a bit So yeah, if you're in the UK and you ask me a question after midnight, you're just going to have to plump for deciding whether you join in or not without getting an answer from me.
Yeah, so go and have a look now. If you're listening now, go and have a look now. And if there's anything you want to ask, but I'm sure that all the questions actually will have been, you've got a Q&A thing on there. But
yes,
you'll know. I think we both kind of believe that you have an instinct about whether this is the right time for you. So that's very exciting.
So what about you this week?
Well, I've done nothing because... Mm-hmm. I thought my idea for the week was we're going to be away. We're going to be at Dartmoor. It's going to be August. It will be sunny. It's beautiful down there. It doesn't have to be boiling hot, but beautiful sunny. We'll have walks. I'll take sketchbooks. We'll do drawing. No. It was grey and rainy and misty the entire week, varying between not being able to see more than 20 yards one night and heavy rain at other times, the occasional little pause. So we did get a couple of good walks in late in the evening, but you know, no, almost zero ability to go out and do drawing because A, it was either pouring with rain or you couldn't see anything. So that put the limits on. And then often when it's like that, I think, well, I've got a list of loads of other things I could do. I could be updating my website. I could be doing my mailing list. No internet for a whole week. So I've been totally cut off. The upside of that is I've caught up from sleep. I did some reading and I've become addicted to two dots on my phone.
I think that if any Americans are listening, and I only say Americans because I used to live there, I don't know, people from other countries may be like this too, but they think often that the most idyllic place to live is the English countryside, and you know, it's just all rolling hills and beautiful, and it is beautiful, mm-hmm. but generally no internet and pouring rain sounds about right for August in the English countryside.
Not usually. I have to say we have had some terrific summers, and my son always says, you know, England in summer, there's nowhere nicer to be, and he's right. When it's like that and that's your week that you've been looking forward to away from work, it was a little bit depressing, gloomy, you know, wasn't quite what we had.
This is where I'm the weirdo, because this last week I've loved, it's my best week of the summer. Absolutely can't stand hot weather. Don't like to be sweaty. I like to have jumpers on and boots, and I like to be outside in the rain and the wind. And I'm the only person I know. I can't find another person like me. So if you're listening to this and you also prefer it to be grey and rainy with the rain lashing in your face, let me know.
Oh, my husband does. We did cut a tree down, and my job was pulling the rope so that the top of the tree fell the right way, so not onto
me. Do that in the rain?
Well, little pause in the rain, maybe.
It doesn't sound like a good holiday.
We did, and also there were things that, like, there was one thing, kind of, actually, this actual rain, this is just cloud. We're just in cloud. It's just wet, but you can't feel it. Let's go for a walk. And then, you know, that point on a walk where you get so far that, you know, you're the furthest that you can be, and you know you've got as long to get back. Then it started raining.
Yep.
So by the time I got home, we were a picture of dripping, sodden trousers, hats, dripping. Even the dog was like, what are we doing? Why are we here? But it was definitely a break, but it just wasn't quite the week that I anticipated. So that takes us rather nicely onto our main topic, which is basically going to be, what do we do when things don't quite go the way we planned? And how do you kind of realign? I mean, like I said, I used the word depressing not so long ago. I do find it depressing, particularly when you've built up anticipation for something, when you've got something that you're looking forward to. I tend to kind of go into a little bit of a, well, I don't know what to do with myself now slump when things like that happen. And sometimes it's difficult to kind of shake yourself out of it. So, and I know that you've had things this last week with, again, which you've been working for and anticipating, and they haven't gone as you hoped. So there's two things here. How do you how do you react to that emotionally? And how long do you stay in that kind of place?
That wasn't pretty. My emotional reaction wasn't pretty.
What happened?
So it was the big launch. So when you sell something in internet marketing, everybody tells you that you don't give away the price or any of the information about it until a certain point, and then that's your big launch moment. And I was taking that advice, but also the free course I was doing, I wanted it to stay focused on everyone's creativity and not be about me selling something.
Yeah.
So I waited until, was it Friday night? I can't remember. Saturday night to do my big, right now, I'm going to tell you how much it costs and how you can sign up and what it involves.
And people were asking, I really want to do your thing. Can you tell us about it?
Yes.
Now? How much was it? And, you know, you're right. There are very good reasons for keeping it back, in terms of, well, we're doing this now. Let's just enjoy what we're doing now.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to cloud your enjoyment of this before you think about moving on to the main part.
Yeah. And you don't want people who can't afford or have no interest in taking the course.
Yeah.
To not listen to you because you're just talking about selling. So. Yeah. So I have this big launch planned, and I use a software lots of people will know called Zoom, which you can do a webinar or a presentation on for people to come in, but you can also stream it to Facebook. And so I had told people, you can either join the Zoom link or you can come to the Facebook group and watch this presentation. And so Zoom went okay. There were, you know, a couple of hundred people on there listening. And then I went to connect it to Facebook. And the first time this has ever happened to me, although I've seen it happen to other people, it wouldn't connect to Facebook. It wouldn't stream live into the group. So you have this audience of people watching you while you're trying to work out, can I do this again? How long can I keep this going before people start leaving while I'm trying to keep trying? And I knew it just wasn't going to work. So I had to say to everybody, wait, I'll just go post a message in the Facebook group to say that I can't make it, and then I'll be back and do my presentation. So already at that stage, your brain is kind of, instead of being able to think about what you were going to talk about,
yeah,
you're on like panic mode, trying to problem solve, what can I do? So I did my presentation, and people were asking, well, what's the price? No, it wasn't what's the price. It was something else. They were asking me a question anyway. And I said, all the details are in the email that's gone out to you, because I had scheduled the email to go out at the time of the call. And I get all these chat messages back saying, no email, no email, no email. So I quickly go on MailChimp and I see that it was just sending for the last hour and a half. It hadn't gone for some reason.
I was just, do you think that's to do with your internet? It shouldn't be, should it? If you're streaming from Zoom, it's on theirs at that end. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Zoom thing was the Facebook to Zoom connection. Because I've seen that happen with other people where I'm watching a presentation and they're going, oh, for some reason it won't connect to Facebook. So, so that went wrong. And so they didn't have the email. Meanwhile, there's all these people in Facebook saying, where's Louise? What's happening? Because even though you post a notice, people don't see it. Of course they don't. That's not how Facebook works. So my big presentation didn't go out to anywhere near the number of people. I decided what I can do is, now I'm done. And I think during the presentation, I think I was remarkably calm and controlled. I don't think anybody else could tell how stressed I was. So I was proud of that. But the stress levels were really building. And then I thought, I'll upload the recording to YouTube and send out a link in the morning to everybody to watch it. But at that point, my internet dropped to almost nothing. And my video took, I think, 3.5 hours to upload to YouTube.
Whoa.
So I was still up at midnight watching the little bar go 56% and then 57%. And this is living in the country. This is, our internet is not always reliable. So eventually I got to bed about 12:30. But if you ask my husband what my emotional state was by the time I got to, you know, go to bed, there was a lot of swearing and there was a lot of, I can't believe what's happening to me. Everything's going wrong. This is not, the universe doesn't want me to succeed. And he's got this really supportive and completely annoying habit of trying to cheer me up when I'm stressed out.
Yeah.
If you know that feeling. So he's like, look,
it'll be okay.
Fine. You know, people sign up if they want to sign up. Don't try to make everything seem positive. Why do you have to make everything seem positive?
I know, sometimes you just want to have a grumble, don't you?
Yeah, but what made me feel better was, and this is bad, because what made me feel better was that some people began to sign up. And I say that's bad because I don't think I should actually, at my age, need that kind of thing to calm me back down. I think I should have the intelligence to control this reaction a little bit better. And so it cheered me up because signups went well. And by the time I woke up, you know, I felt like, okay, well, if I did ruin it, I've been able to recover it, and people will find out about the course over the next week. And this big launch thing is only one way of doing it anyway. So I was fine the next day, but that emotional reaction was not good.
Yeah. But I think it's almost inevitable. Is it inevitable? I don't know. I mean, lots of people listening to this won't be involved in that kind of level of techie stuff. And I've kind of written down, should artists even be involved with this? And, you know, it can be a painful learning curve doing things like that, because it's kind of not what we're really here to do. And yes, it would be lovely to have somebody else to manage all of that stuff for us, but the key driver behind it is because there's a purpose in what you want to get out and share with people. So it becomes a necessary thing to tackle. But I think it happens in art world too. Things go wrong. So it could be you're on your way to a show, you're on your way to an event, and there's a massive kind of pile up on the motorway in front of you, or huge traffic, and you get there late, and all your plans for having 4 hours to hang, suddenly you've got to squish everything into half an hour. I remember an artist I know, her car broke down on the way to a show, and, you know, I can't even know what happened in that, whether she got the tow truck to tow her car to the art fair so that she could offload it before it went off to the garage. But I mean, that kind of, it's the same thing. You've done a huge amount of work for months beforehand for this one event, and then something happens, or something twists, or you lose your voice and you can't talk to people.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
In every kind of field, I think there can be moments, and, you know, me having a rainy week is minimal in comparison. All the things that I wanted to do, I can do at a later date. But those big build-ups, particularly when it's things that we actually can't preempt, what's the alternative?
Yeah, I think the thing that I learned from it is, so this was perhaps the thing that I've put the most time and energy into in my entire life. I was thinking back, I don't know that I've ever probably worked so hard on something, because it means so much to me. But I think what I learned from it is that level of stress that I had when things went wrong, it was actually completely unnecessary, because I actually genuinely believe that people who were right for the course would sign up for it because they would know it was right for them. And whether my technology went wrong and they had to wait another day to hear about it really doesn't make any difference. Yeah, you may lose a small amount of money because somebody then forgot about it the next day, but really, it's not that big of a deal. It feels that big of a deal. You get in that state. And then my husband was right when he said, it's really not that important. Everything will be fine. So why is that so annoying? Why can't I say that to myself? I think I was proud of the fact that it didn't show to anybody else. In the past, when I was younger, that would have shown to everyone.
Yeah.
In my 30s, I would have been, not that I did things like this then, but I would have been, you know, oh, well, everybody, this is great, isn't it? This has all gone wrong. People would have seen my irritation, but they didn't, I'm fairly certain. But the fact that I blasted it all out all over my house afterwards, that I wish I hadn't done. And I would love to get to the point, and I think this is why these things happen, or what they're not why they happen, but what they're there to teach us is that it's all okay anyway. It's always all okay. It's just that we turn it into this giant thing. And it's not a giant thing. I mean, let's say your car broke down. You didn't get to hang your paintings in time at the art fair. You didn't even make it to the art fair. And so you lost £1,000 or whatever on a booth, and you didn't sell your paintings. But when you got home, your husband was okay, your dogs were okay, your house was still there, food was still in the fridge. It's not actually any of it all that important.
Yes, and I think you're right. It's the resilience to it, and the ability to continue and to put it into perspective. But I also still think that there is a place of that kind of emotional up and down that happens, because if we don't have that, it's simply because we're so emotionally invested in something that when it goes wrong, we feel it so keenly. And actually, yeah. I worry that if I lost that feeling or that reaction, I would start to become like too blasé about everything. And then perhaps I wouldn't have the motivation to feel that anything was important. And I really would play two dots forever.
Well, it's funny who many people know. She has three questions that are supposed to, you know, change your whole perspective on life. And if you can really apply them, I'm sure they do. And someone was asking her, they were scared because they were getting to the point of the ability to apply these three questions where they really were staying very zen about everything. And yeah. This person said, I feel like I'm losing my personality.
Yeah.
I feel like, and she said, you are, and it needs to go. And then you'll be on this other plane where you're
this is the
like
whole
me.
Kind of losing your ego. And
yeah. And I just thought, I don't want to lose my personality.
Like,
at this point, I'm not asking myself these questions anymore. But she does always look very, very happy. You can see it in her eyes. So you think, oh, it might be quite nice to look like that.
I just wonder if it's a payoff, though, that we have to accept. And I think, you know, for me, I'm coming at it slightly from the point of view of that I had those years of depression and I took antidepressants, which, you know, without them, I wouldn't have been able to function and I wouldn't have been able to get to the stage where I could even talk to a therapist and figure it out and do everything else. But I know that when I stopped taking them, one of the reasons that I wanted to stop taking them was because they leveled me out emotionally so much that I felt that I was no longer getting those kind of ups and downs they do feel part of my personality, you know. And I felt that I was actually losing a little bit of me by staying on this kind of slightly withdrawn, slightly spaced out, nothing really got to me place.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to feel like that. So I just wonder if there is a balance between obviously there's a balance between walking around your house and swearing and throwing things and crying.
I didn't throw anything. I don't think
you didn't
I threw
throw
anything.
No. Okay, that's good. That's good. I've been watching, is it Big Little Lies? Finally, the first series
of
that. Yes.
Oh, brilliant.
Well, there's a couple in that, and you kind of think, well, you know, interesting sex life. Not so happy with the other side of it. You know, there's this, but the point is this the price that you have to pay a little bit? And I think this is perhaps where it's relevant for artists is how emotionally connected we are to things that we feel strongly about. And do you really want to be zen about
no,
everything?
No, I don't. But I think what I would like to be able to do is in that moment, I've got very good when I get depressed or anxious, I've got very good at stepping out and watching myself do it.
Yeah.
And and be aware that, okay, this is just an, this is just a passing thing. It's not like it has to consume me, but the, that's kind of stress level actually did consume me. And I wasn't able, I'd like to be able to step out of it far enough to, for example, maybe say to Phil, look, I know I'm being unreasonable. I know I'm, you know, it's just stressful. So maybe just leave me be and I'm sure I'll be fine in the morning. Something like that rather than, it's not, I don't want, please everybody, don't think I was like something from The Exorcist with my head spinning round. I just felt like this is getting to me too much. Yeah. And I no longer was able to access that more rational part of my brain that says,
yeah,
it'll be fine in the end. It's not. And that came back, like I say, by morning.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I'm not even slightly worried about it now. And whatever happens with it, it'll be whatever it is. And then I know I'll be fine because I'll do other things. Like, let's say it was the biggest flop ever. It would be still fine. Because I'd still have an idea to do something else. So it's just that I envy people because I know people who are more able to stay calm in those situations.
Yeah, do you know what I think it is? They might be able to stay calm in those situations, but they would probably lose it in other situations that you might feel calm about. I think that's the point, maybe. Is that, you know, all of us, like my husband can stay very calm about some things and then he can completely like lose his rag in an airport queue. And in an airport queue, I'm like, you know, what's the big deal? The plane's not going to leave without us. It's just taking a bit of time. We just go with the flow. It's not a problem. He finds that incredibly stressful and really like loses his on those. But I think you make a good point about if you're with other people. So there's how long do you stay in it? And there's getting to the point where you understand what you need to do and being able to say that to somebody else. So being able to say to him, I don't want this to be fixed. I just need to rant for 10 minutes. Go into the garden and I'm going to shout and then I'm going to come back in and I will be fine. And you probably will be. And I think what I'm trying to get at is sometimes we need to get to that. We need to reach that sort of emotional pitch a little bit, but just know how to manage it. And I think sometimes if you can feel that kind of stress or whatever it is building, you need to have a way to let off steam, vent steam, because that's quicker than trying to keep everything calm and keep everything calm all the time. Sometimes it's good to get to that point where it's just annoying and you could just say, this is annoying. It's annoying. Like the children last week complaining about the weather. Yeah, it's annoying for me too. I was also looking forward to sunny weather. And no, we can't do this. And no, we can't even make your biscuit tower for the local fete because all the biscuits are going to go soggy and the icing's going to melt in this cloud we're living in, and it's not what we wanted, but it is what it is, as they say in Love Island. And you know,
it's funny you see that with children, because with my neighbor who's here all the time and everyone's heard of him now, we've been having these internet problems, and generally the normal things on the internet are fine, but live streaming, anything that's streaming, takes up a lot of bandwidth and that'll drop out, and so his game keeps throwing him off. And just because it'll cut out for a second.
Yeah.
So he's 12. So he comes and says, the internet's not working. And I say, well, you know, we've called them and they're going to come out in a few days. He thinks if he looks at me with really big sad eyes that I'll somehow...
You'll be able to fix it.
Come up with a different solution. And you realize that watching children, which obviously I don't have children, but seeing children deal with that, that's the end of it, where they don't have any of that logic or ability to control. And especially as you get into being a teenager, then you start to have emotions rampaging through you, but you haven't yet got the logical ability to know how to think them through, which I remember being really difficult. So at least when I was a teenager, oh my goodness, teenage me, what would I have done with this situation?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't even imagine. That would have been
It really fun for people around you.
Dramatic.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I hope if you've had moments of not great weeks or things going wrong, that has made you feel a little bit better, which I guess is really what we wanted to show, because we don't have the solutions or the answers to this. But, you know, sometimes this was the week that we were both having and we were just kind of saying, what are we going to talk about on the podcast this week? And this seemed like the obvious question to it. So let us know your horror stories and let's move on to something else. Okay, our audience question this week is from an Instagram message, and I do apologise that I don't remember it word for word, and I've been back through all my messages and I couldn't find it, but I'm pretty sure it was Instagram message. And the crux of the question was somebody asking whether she should go back and take an MA in art and whether that was necessary in order to kind of make progress as an artist. And this was somebody who had two different degrees already. And the question was, therefore, you know, is this a sensible thing for me to do? And is it necessary in the art world? And I think this is a great question to ask, but I'm not sure. I think the best person to answer it in a way would be a panel of people, one of whom have been back and taken an MA, and I can only do that looking at it from the outside. What I would say though is that the natural state of the artist is always to be learning. And then the question becomes, so what is the best way to do that for you? And for some of you, it might be an MA, but not always. So, but I just wonder if there is a state where that kind of level of education becomes necessary and is recognized within the art world, and without it, it becomes a barrier.
Yeah, and that's, I have no idea. I have an instinctive sense that if art's good enough, it doesn't make any difference what your background is. But perhaps if art's good but not Picasso, I don't know. Does it matter then? Does it matter to certain people? When you say the art world, when you say that, I think of established galleries and curators and, you know, posh people that I don't have anything to do with. I think of it as another world outside myself. But the art world actually is a lot broader than that, isn't it? So partly it depends which part of the art world are we talking about. So if we're talking about a really nice little gallery in a market town somewhere, in a wealthy shire somewhere down there where you live, where I don't know where anything is, like Surrey or somewhere like that, then maybe it doesn't. I can't imagine it does. But if we're talking about some top gallery and they have to explain their choices of artists to collectors, does it matter if their artists have a formal education? I just have no idea.
I think it's a little bit like those levels that you have at school. So you take your GCSEs and they're really important while you're taking your GCSEs, but they're really only a next step to what you take for A-level, which is really only a next step to what you're going to go on and do to university, which is really only a next step to opening the doors to you for what kind of world you want to work in and what you're interested in. And at that point, nobody ever asks you about what GCSEs you got. And I think that an MA therefore is a little bit like, I mean, I don't know, but when I go to an artist's website, do I look and search to see if they've done an MA? Like the artist's work who I admire, that appeals to me, that I, you know, cross cities to go and look at, that I make a point of searching out. Am I interested that they've done an MA or not? No, I'm interested in the work that they're currently producing, and by that nature, what they have had to have done in order to get to that point to make it of interest to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think an MA could be part of that for some people, but I don't think it has to be. That's what I'm guessing at.
And I think this question as well will really vary country to country. So it's such a mess. I don't even know where this person's from, but I know there's a lot of talk in America about Master of Fine Arts degrees and the lack of preparation that there is for artists within those degrees, either to make good artwork or to go out into the world and make a success. And there's I've watched numerous artist interviews where they discourage people from going for those degrees because of the amount of money, particularly in the States, that you spend on a degree and what you actually get out of it. I mean, I just, my natural inclination is always to forge ahead and get on with doing the work rather than spend time studying. But I would say to this person, if you feel like there's a specific reason why an MA would really work for you, because someone you know went and did an MA and the course of study that they followed really lit something up inside them, and you see what they got out of it, and you can see that that would work for you, then in that case, I would decide to do it. But if my reasoning for doing it was, this might open doors for me and make my career better, yeah, I think a better way to spend that money and time on working on your art and building up people's awareness of you through marketing yourself and building a kind of an art business, as opposed to spending it or giving it to a college to...
Yeah, it's an experiential thing, isn't it? And I was reading a book last week, and one of the things that they said, much like you, was that, you know, how often actually sometimes working within that kind of confines and structure and how the course is worked out can put as much, it can hold you back in some ways as much as push you forward, because there might be certain tutors on that course, for example, who are encouraging people into more conceptual work when you really want to do painting or vice versa. So I think you have to look really specifically at the course you want to do and ask the question about, is that actually going to get you to where you want to get to? And for that, you have to define your answer about where you want to get to and what's important. And I think the fact that you've got two MAs already, just that for me just made me think, I just wonder if this is actually looking for structure that somebody else is providing. And I think once you leave that sheltered and rather structured environment of an MA, it's back to being you alone anyway. I mean, one of the reasons that I was looking at it for was for working studio space. And you know, then I met students and they said, you don't even get that anymore. It's like, well, how do you turn up and do the work if there's nowhere to turn up and do the work too? But so is it structure that you're looking for? In which case, ultimately, it's going to be up to you to create that space and discipline for your own structure anyway. Really, I mean, you could call galleries and say, do you look for this? Do you look for MAs? But I think Louise is right. It's more about doing the work, and that's how I've always focused on it. You know, if it's about learning and projects and looking at other artists' work, then I make time to do that. Probably not as much as I would do if I were on a course and being pushed to write a dissertation, but does it really matter writing a dissertation anyway? I don't know. I think the inquiry into your own practice is what an MA is probably really about. And I think we can find that in other places. So it's about learning to make work that matters to you. And what it's certainly not going to give you any business training to make you successful, in inverted commas. That's one thing that I see and hear over and over and over again. That is not what you get from an MA. So I don't know. I mean, I've learned a lot from different courses. Just giving myself self-imposed projects. And I think what you get most of all from that kind of environment is that sense of critique and feedback. And that's probably the hardest thing to recreate outside of it. But ultimately, how much do other people's views matter?
Yeah.
Tough. It's a tough one, isn't it?
It is.
I think it is. And also, I think if you just want to do it for your own sake, just do it for your own sake, not for what the end result is going to be.
That's what I think. Do it.
Yeah.
If it feels like something, I just want to spend 3 years focusing on my art in a structured environment and I have the money and time to do it.
Yeah.
And you really want to do it, then there's nothing wrong with doing it. But if it's for to, you know, to impress someone or to maybe open some doors or to, because you don't know what else to do, I wouldn't.
I just always come back to when I think of these things, you know, what am I hoping to get from this? And what else could I do with the resources that I'm about to spend on it? And I know that that is a little bit different with MA, because I know for MA funding, you know, you can get funding for it and then you might not even have to repay it. But I think it's still an attitude of investing, and that there are other things that you could invest your money in, both in time and materials and hiring space to work in, all sorts of exciting things that you could do that could actually get you further along that road. So I'm really sorry that I couldn't find your specific message, and I hope that that was helpful. Let us know what you decide. And for anybody else as well who's been in similar situations, what did your MA give you? It would be great to have conversation around that.
Yes, and also should add the disclaimer that we are not professional career advisors and that you should seek advice from perhaps someone else as well.
Yeah, we both clearly have decided not to take an MA, so, you know, our view is totally biased. Okay, as we finish up this episode, what has inspired you this week?
Oh, well, that is completely easy. All of the work done in my free course, the quality of it, the way people threw themselves into it, but most of all, the fact that that 8 days has proven to me that my theory that I came up with last year out of the blue on a dog walk is right, that you can release anybody's creativity, and that when you do, or they can release their own creativity, and that when they do that, they have a unique voice and you see it instantly. Yes, it needs refining, and yes, you know, we want to develop good artwork and we want to employ principles of composition and so on in our artwork. But initially, I really believe that we have to free up our own personal creativity before we start worrying about what makes a good painting and what's right and what's wrong. And this 8 days is just completely fired me up. And if I wasn't so tired, I'd sound fired up. But the work that people produced, and I have one exercise where I ask people to make the ugliest painting they can make, the worst one, just go for it. And some of those paintings were stunning. And I was thinking, I could totally picture this 6 feet by 4 feet in a New York gallery with white walls behind it and everyone walking around going, wow, look at the depth in that painting. And that really makes me feel something. Because they really did. Most of the work that was being produced made you feel something. And so it really just, it just got me going again to realize that everybody has that in them. And I feel like, and this sounds really grandiose, but it feels like this is my rest of my life thing that I want to do. I want to work with people to help them get this out, because it's so powerful when it happens. I know, because it happened to me and it literally is life changing. And I just want that for everybody. So I decided if I could have a superpower, it would be like the art fairy flying around the world, just zapping artists on the head with a little zapper that suddenly made them not self-conscious, not have limiting beliefs, not worry what anyone else is thinking, and just paint or make whatever they wanted to paint or make. And then imagine how much amazing art there would be in the world. Although I think it's too much competition in that case.
Well, if you're doing it for release and for, you know, your own kind of joy and interest and intrigue, that can never be wrong, can it? And I think that exercise, the fact that, you know, it's got associations with unpleasant things, you know, make it ugly, make it distasteful, make it dirty, make it raw, make it, you know, and that it's by going into that, you know, you release something that other people say, wow, that really strikes me, or there's something that's really beautiful within that. You know, that's probably, you know, that's why all of this discussion that we've had today about when things go wrong and when they aren't pretty and when they don't go according to plan, it's an important part. It's an important part of all of it, of life, of managing your emotions, of making art. And that it's another reason why I don't want to be zen and happy and easy and everything going perfectly all the time, because we need that side too. We need the raw, nasty, rough side too, while still hopefully being nice people.
Yeah. So what's inspired you this week?
Well, I was hoping to say the Lee Krasner exhibition that I went to visit yesterday at the Barbican, but there were no tubes running and it was
just to tie in with this week's theme.
Oh, couldn't have made it up, could you? So instead, I would say it's everybody this week who I have seen who have survived a rainy week camping with their children. These are all true stories. Been stuck on a train for 6 hours with a child who has a train phobia when the electricity went down. Who has fallen and broken their femur and been stuck waiting for an ambulance for 4 hours and had to have an operation. And everybody who has gone through difficult things and come out the other end, and we are still here. So I, you know, this side of life is inspiring, and you know, it's not all happiness and light, but we all get through it. So that's it. That's what's inspired me this week.
When you hear stories of other people's lives, you realize, you know, stop moaning about the fact that the Zoom didn't connect to the Facebook or whatever. Stop moaning about the fact the internet went out in Dartmoor. It's really not the world's greatest problem, is it?
It really isn't. We should just delete this whole episode.
Yeah, we should. Again. Just stop whining.
Right. So that wraps up episode 30, and coming next week and the week after, we have a little bit of a break for you, a little bit of a change in pace. Next week, Louise is interviewing artist Jackie Fail, and the following week, we have a recording of a discussion that I had with Megan Woodard Johnson, and they both have a totally different take. We get a glimpse into their working process, and this is, I think, going to be an interesting break. Good listening over your summer holidays. So stay tuned for that, and we will see you when we come back together back in September. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I was going to say something then. Huge task. It's the first time I've done it with adults. And the first... That sounds awful.
I think you might want to rework.
Oh, dear. Welcome to episode 29 of Art Juice. Oh, no, it's not 29, is it? That's the wrong note. Sorry.
And
hang on a minute. Sorry. I just never pressed record.
Oh, I did. So I've
you
got
did.
It.
Yeah. Are we going to rely on the fact that yours is working?